Okay, everybody find a seat. We're going to get started. Liz will be here in a little bit. I am not Liz Kniss. Okay, I have to double check with my technology people. Is this officially 9:45? Karen? You always have that thing. Is it 9:45? Look at your little... Okay, we are convened. Please do the roll call, Marcy.
On the roll for the Board of Directors meeting for August 2nd, 2017, Director Abe-Koga, Director Barrett, Director Canepa, Director Chavez, Director Cutter, Director Joya, Director Groom,
present.
Director Haggerty, Director Kaplan, Director Kim, Director Miley, Director Mitchell, Director Ju, Director Ronan, Director Ross, Director Sanchez, Director Sheehy, Director Sinks, Director Sparing, Director Wagon Connect, Director Zane, Secretary Rice, Vice Chair Hudson, Chair Niss. We have a quorum.
Good morning, everyone, and welcome to the August 2nd board meeting. Rather amazing. Apologies for being a little late. I have a new GPS, and she somehow wanted me to go through South San Francisco.
Must have been a he.
He.
That's absolutely right.
Thanks for the correction and for the humor. So with that, are there any opening comments that anyone has? I have none, and if you don't have any, we will go to the Pledge of Allegiance. And why don't we have a woman do that?
Yeah.
Allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
And with that, I'm going to ask Jack if he would say a word or two about why we're going into conference right away. We're going into closed session.
Well, good morning, Madam Chair.
Good morning.
Members of the board. We have two items we want to talk to you all about under closed session. First and foremost, we want to be able to brief the board relative to our labor negotiations, and we have a proposed tentative agreement we want to hopefully have the board agree to. And if so, that item is actually going to be listed and be a part of your consent calendar later. So largely we want to be able to get that out of the way and have that hopefully in place, and we can move forward. We're actually past the July 1st deadline for when we normally have our contracts come to fruition. So we'd just as soon brief the board and hopefully get you to agree in terms of the tentative agreement we've made with our employees association. Also, we have an item we want to talk to you a little bit about, which is anticipated litigation surrounding the same regulatory issues that we've been wrestling with for some time over the last couple of months. And we'll take this opportunity to brief you on that as well, Madam Chair.
Thanks very much. And I believe we have a speaker card. Am I right, Marcy?
Yes. Would you like to hear?
Yes, please.
Okay. So Chris Coelho. And how long will he be getting?
40 minutes.
Yes. Do you just have one card? 3 minutes.
Okay. Hold on, Chris.
Thank you, Chair Niss. Thank you, members of the board. Thanks, Jack, and thanks, Rex. My name is Chris Coelho, and I'm president of the Employees Association. It is both a privilege and an honor to be here today to represent this union. Over the past 8 months, the Employees Association and the Air District met to negotiate a successor contract. Negotiations are never easy, and this one was no different. It took longer than anticipated. It went past the contract deadline. It was an engaging endeavor. but at no time are negotiations between the EA and the district contentious, and there are even a few smiles and jokes along the way. Eventually, both sides reached an agreement that I believe is the best contract that we could get. On July 17th, our membership voted to approve this contract. I come here today to ask for your support and to vote in favor of this proposed contract. In addition, I would also like to invite you to our annual picnic, and I have a flyer for that, if I can hand that out.
Okay, thank you very much. Any other comments?
One more comment after everyone gets the flyer.
Sorry.
I still have a minute.
I think most of us have the flyer. It's very attractive, so if you want to say a few more
words. Once you receive this flyer, I would ask for you to turn it over. And who has a sticker? You guys get a prize.
We all have stickers, right?
No. Blank as can be.
You got a sticker.
What do I get for my sticker?
Round trip. Do you want me to hand them up? Okay.
Mr. Bunger, am I allowed to take a gift before voting on negotiations?
You might have to recuse yourself.
I didn't get one either.
I think it better be forbidden in this case.
It's great to see you're doing your picnic on the shoreline in Richmond. You get kudos for that. That's great.
That's your bonus already.
Oh, seriously. Thank you, Chris. Oh, that's nice.
Thank you.
Okay. It says 10% every year.
Okay, you have now all received your prize. Thank you so much for the invitation to the picnic that is on Saturday, August 19th. And we certainly appreciate your making this so evident to us, plus giving a prize to just a very few of us. I don't believe the chair got a prize. So be it. So with that, unless someone has any other comment, we will be going into closed session. And I think this will be a somewhat longer closed session than usual, so apologies ahead of time to all of you who are waiting, but the information that we're going to be discussing has been brewing now for about 2 months. So I anticipate this will be slightly longer than usual. Thanks so much. Okay, everyone, we are back. We've had a productive closed session. Thank you all. And going on now with our regular meeting, which is going to, first of all, let me just ask, some of you have a really tight schedule today. Karen told me she's out at 11:30. Does anyone else have a time?
Madam Chair, we need to report out of closed session.
So sorry. Hold my feet to the fire. May I have a report on closed session?
The board met in closed session on items 1 and 2 on the agenda, and there is no report out on either of those items.
Thank you very much. So as I said, we're back in open session. So first question is, knowing Karen has a deadline, does anyone else have a drop-dead deadline where you've got to leave?
12:30.
Okay, so let's aim for 12:30. That'll be in, it may not take that long. So, again, back into open session, and have I forgotten anything? And if not, we'll go into the consent calendar.
Okay. Consent calendar.
Second on consent, Madam Chair.
Okay, we moved and seconded, and Jim, I know you would like to comment. Yeah. And I, Brian, I need to ask you our rules on comments at, before or after the vote.
I think typically we take them before.
Okay. Yeah. In that case, Jim, fire on.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just wanted to clarify on the agreement, the employee agreement, is that it's a 2-year agreement, and that staff has stated that in future negotiations there will be discussions about cost sharing on the medical cost. As most of us know, you know, our counties and cities are looking at projections of 30-40% increases. And so I just wanted on the record that, you know, there is an expectation that that will never be discussed in future negotiations. So that was the point. And that was my statement. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Okay. Thank you. Anyone else have a comment on something that is on consent? If not, we have a motion and a second. Do we need roll call on this, or can we do it by indication? Okay. All those in, let's try it this way. Is there any dissension? Ms. Barrett?
No.
Okay. If there's no dissension, then we will consider that passed unanimously and go on to committee reports. I think there's just one report out today, which is Climate Protection Committee. And Ms. Barrett?
There's a whole line of them.
Is there a whole line and I'm not seeing them? Yeah. Oh, I'm sorry. Yes.
It's 11 through 15.
Yes, yes, I do see them. Thank you.
Shall I start?
Yes, please.
The Climate Protection Committee met on Thursday, May 18th, 2017, and approved the minutes of March 22nd. The committee received and discussed the presentation 2017 scoping plan update, the proposed strategy for achieving California's 2030 greenhouse gas target given by the California Air Resources Board. The committee then received and discussed the presentation plan Bay Area 2040 given by the Metropolitan Transportation Commission. Finally, the committee received and discussed the staff presentation implementation of the 2017 Clean Air Plan. The next meeting of the committee was held on Thursday, July 20th at 9:30 at 375 Beale Street. This concludes the chair report for the Climate Protection Committee.
Good. Thank you very much. Any comments on that report? If not, that takes us on to number 12, which is mobile.
Sorry. That requires a vote.
I thought we usually voted on them all at once.
Next time.
Mobile source and the second climate committee report, because there's a resolution on the next climate committee report.
Okay. Well, do you want to vote on 11 as well? Is that what you're saying?
No, Matt.
Okay,
no, sure.
So on number 12, yes. Okay. So moving on, this is Director Mischoff.
Thank you. The mobile source committee met on Thursday, May 25th, 2017, and approved the minutes of our March 23rd meeting. The committee reviewed and discussed the staff presentation on fiscal year ending 2018 relative to Transportation Fund for Clean Air Regional Fund Policies and Evaluation Criteria, and a proposed amendment to one fiscal year ending transportation for that policy. The committee recommends to the board that we approve the proposed fiscal year ending 2018 Transportation Fund for Clean Air Regional Fund Policies and Evaluation Criteria, which are presented in Attachment A, and to also approve the proposed amendment to the readiness policy in the fiscal year ending 2017 Transportation Fund for Clean Air Regional Fund Policies. We then reviewed and discussed the staff presentation on fiscal year ending 2018 relative to Transportation Fund for Clean Air. I'm going to refer to that from here on out as TFCA. Program manager expenditure plans. The committee recommends the board approve the allocation of new fiscal year ending 2018 TFCA county program manager funds listed in table one, and authorize the executive officer, the air pollution control officer, to enter into funding agreements with the county program managers for the total funds to be programmed in fiscal year ending 2018, also listed in table one. Finally, the committee reviewed and discussed the staff presentation, an update on regional efforts to deploy electric vehicles and infrastructure. Our next meeting will be called at the call of the chair, which will probably be in September, and I move that the board approve the Mobile Source Committee's recommendations. This concludes our report. Thank you.
Is the motion a second?
Second. Question?
Yes.
I just wanted to ask, and it's fine if this comes back to the next Mobile Source Committee, but specifically for some follow-up on the electric vehicle efforts. I've been, you know, sharing the flyers that we had with folks and trying to get them out there to people. They had printed on them a deadline of last week. So either if there's a new deadline or an extension or money left. Also, I noted the flyer didn't have a phone number or a website on it. The one that we were given to give out for the electric, it had an email address, but not a phone number or a website on the flyer. And then just if we could talk in the future about more ways to do outreach, because one of the things we're discovering in our city is there's a big hole in rental apartments of not having electric car charging, and so a whole community of people can't get electric cars. And so how we could do more outreach to property owners, associations, and things like that. I've tried to share it with the ones that I know of, but to try to get the fact of what we're doing. And then lastly, when we come back, I understand Volkswagen is putting money into electric car charging infrastructure, so whether we're getting that and...
A lot of money.
And if so, what are our next steps for you know, upping the how we roll that out would be awesome. And of course, I'll ask about the electric car charging stations in this building for that too. Thank you. Thank you so much.
No, we'll so Madam Chair, we'll make sure those items are at the next Mobile Source Committee.
Right. Thank you so much.
Jack, you may want to have a summary of the Air Board recently approved the whole investment plan by Volkswagen last week.
Exactly.
$800 million, so get maybe a briefing that whole thing.
I have a comment also, and I do think this should be the last year we consider allowing hybrids to be allowed for the TFCA funding for our light-duty passenger vehicles, and that if we're going to adhere to kind of the statements that we've made in our climate action plan, consistent with our agreement to the Paris Agreement pledge here in the Air District and our leadership, we got to start moving towards our zero emission future, just like we're doing in all these other categories, and bring it together and package it together and move forward. Thank you.
That's a good point. Thank you.
Are there any other questions about this report in general? Okay, if not, there was a motion and a second. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. That passes, and we go on to number 13, which is the Personnel Committee Chair, Director Sparing.
Thank you, Madam Chair. The committee met on Friday, June 2nd, and approved the minutes of the March 24th meeting. The committee reviewed and discussed four candidates to fill the one alternate member vacancy in the attorney category on the Air District's hearing board. The committee and staff discussed the recruitment process and then interviewed each candidate, and the committee recommends the board approve the appointment of Danny Cullenward as attorney category alternate. And the next meeting of the committee is at the call of the chair, and I would move the board approve the personnel committee recommendations.
Okay, moved and seconded. Let's just have a vote. All those in favor?
Aye.
So Danny Cullen Ward is now the attorney category alternate. Thanks very much. I sat in on that meeting. That was a very good meeting. Our next one is my report.
No, it's climate protection part two.
I'm sorry, Director Barrett.
Okay, the Climate Protection Committee met on Thursday, July 20th, and approved the minutes of May 18th. The committee received and discussed the staff presentation, Air District Support for Paris Climate Agreement. The committee recommends the board demonstrate continuing Air District support for the Paris Climate Agreement by supporting the Under 2 Memorandum of Understanding and the We Are Still In sign-on letter. Finally, the committee received and discussed the staff presentation Bay Area Model Solar Ordinance Project. The next meeting of the committee is on Thursday, September 21st at 9:30 a.m. I move the board approve the Climate Protection Committee recommendations.
Second. And we have a couple of comments on this one, Marcy.
I have Dr. Will Scott and Iris Morell.
Okay, if you'd both come forward. And you're speaking to this report, correct?
This is not the first time that I have
turned it on.
You need to turn on your mic.
Hello?
Yes.
Thank you. My name is Will Scott, and this is not the first time that I've spoken to you as Program Director at California Interfaith Power and Light, a statewide organization working to help congregations of all faiths address climate change as the moral issue that it is. The last time I was here to urge you to pass a strong Bay Area refinery cap, and I hope you will proceed honoring the tremendous grassroots effort by so many in this room and beyond to protect the health of our common home. You may have seen the alarming story yesterday in USA Today reporting on a peer-reviewed study that found that there's only a 5% chance that Earth will warm 2 degrees or less by the end of the century, and a mere 1% chance that warming could be at or below 1.5 degrees, which was the target set by the landmark 2016 Paris Agreement. Our state and our region prides itself on innovation and progress, but we must recognize the need to do much more to become carbon neutral, and we must do so much more rapidly. California Interfaith Power and Light encourages the Bay Area Air Quality Management District to sign the Under 2 MOU and the We're Still In letter. May your actions and those of our allies and congregations strengthen and expedite the global effort to hold warming to well below 2 degrees Celsius and accelerate the transition to a clean energy and clean transit economy. Thank you.
Thank you for your comments. Next.
Hello, my name is Iris Morrell. I'm a lifelong San Francisco resident and an advocate for the climate for many years. Growing up in San Francisco, it was always clear to me that working for the climate and the environment at large was of tantamount importance. I was 13 when the Richmond Oil Refinery was on fire, and I could see the flames from my house in San Francisco. It was a spectacular sight, but also a very frightening one. Now I'm spending my summer working with Interfaith Power and Light, and I've spent my free time working with 350 Bay Area and other similar organizations. In all these positions, I would like to impress the importance of the Bay Area's climate leadership upon you. Despite our new inability, given the cap and trade extension, to place limitations upon stationary pollution sources, the Air District still can and must participate in collective climate protection initiatives. Cap and trade is not enough, and it will never be enough. We must continue to pledge and assert our commitment to environmental justice and quality of life for Bay Area residents. Thank you.
Thank you very much. And that concludes our speakers, Marcy. Okay, in that case, we have a motion and a second. Would you indicate your support by saying aye?
Aye.
Aye. Okay, and our last report, let me make sure I didn't miss one, is the Executive Committee meeting, and Dave ran that meeting. I'm going to ask him to do the report.
The committee met on Monday, July 31st, and approved the minutes of February 22nd. The committee received Hearing Board quarterly reports capturing January to March and April to June 2017. The committee then reviewed and discussed the staff presentation, Technology Implementation Office Strategic Planning. Is that when we met Rainey? That's when we met Rainey. Hi, Rainey. The committee then reviewed and discussed the staff presentation contract award for Spare the Air website redesign. The committee recommends the board authorize the executive officer, air pollution control officer, to execute a contract with Silogy, Inc. in the amount of $300,000 for website upgrades. The executive committee reviewed and discussed the staff presentation, update on MyAir online permitting and compliance system. Finally, the committee met in closed session to confer with labor negotiators and recommends that the board of directors accepts the proposed contracts with the Bay Area Air Quality Employees Association, Inc. The next meeting of the executive committee will be held on Monday, September 18th, right here at the Metro Building at 9:30 a.m. I move that the board approve the executive committee's recommendation. This concludes the vice chair's report of the executive committee.
Thank you very much, and I don't believe that we need a vote on that, Dave, but okay. I appreciate that very much. Okay, and that would take...
Wait. There was a recommendation. Is that why your light's on, Gene?
Yeah.
Okay, I'm sorry. You're
there's
right.
a requirement right. to approve the $300,000.
Yes.
Okay. In that case, then, you've made the motion?
I moved. He seconded.
Great. Okay, all those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Okay, we now are, I think, legitimate on every item, correct? Okay, so unless we have overlooked something, we're on to presentations, and the next one is number 16, which is an update, as you can see, Rita, here, of our fiscal year and our community grant projects. And
yes, Chair Niss and members of the Board of Directors, this morning we're pleased to bring a presentation about some grants that this agency issued to some community groups around the region. They've completed their projects, and we'd like to have brief presentations for some of those projects. It's going to be kicked off by David Marshall, and then some of the grantees will actually give you some remarks about their projects. David, thank you.
Good. Thank you.
Thank you. Good morning, Chair Niss and members of the Board of Directors. It's an honor to have this opportunity to open the presentations of our ongoing success of the James Carey Smith Community Grant Program. The board authorized the program in 2015, and we are now in our third year of the program. Against the backdrop of broader political and policy efforts that we all are immersed in, it is even more important to acknowledge the impact of our local community work. To that end, we are proud today to have with us several of our funding year ending 2016, which was the first round of our community grantees that just ended on June 30th. We wish to personally recognize them and highlight their work in promoting and taking steps towards better air quality throughout our region. And I'm going to ask them to come up and introduce themselves and say a few words. First, though, I want to especially thank one of our staff, Rosine Salmo, for her tremendous work with our grantees and administering their contracts. Unfortunately, Rosine will be leaving us, and we are sad to see you go. Okay, I'm going to run through some overview slides to capture a sense of all of our grantees, but I really want to open the time for the grantees to introduce themselves and the representatives to share some of their highlights and some of their impacts with you all. Okay, for the first round of grants, we had 10 completed grants representing 11 counties throughout the region. All the selected projects involved our care communities, and one involved areas adjacent to a major freeway in Santa Rosa. All told, we involved over 30 schools and neighborhood community-based organizations. We had over 45 community events that were supported, and really we touched directly over 1,400 community members throughout these counties. Activities range from local air pollution mitigation projects such as targeted tree planting at schoolyards, installing indoor biofilters, hosting community bike build events, surveying and supporting campaigns for personal ways to reduce air pollution, and our first community science project conducting air quality research in neighborhoods. Okay, now I'm going to run through some slides that highlights the different grants. Center for Climate Protection, Eco to School. This was in Roslyn, Sonoma Valley High School, and Amy Jolly is here to talk about that. They did a school challenge outreach. They reached over 2,000 students and reduced 18,000 miles of vehicle miles traveled was reduced with their projects. the Rails to Trails Conservancy and Rich City Rides. This was a project called Richmond Rides, very exciting project. It involved seven community bike rides, 100-plus participants in total. They had bike giveaways. They're going to tell you about an exciting video they have and talk more about this project. So we have representatives here. We'll talk about that. We have our first teacher grant. We had specific targeted mini-grants to teachers, and we have Dan Rosales from American Canyon High School who had a teacher grant for his science club where they built and calibrated a computer system to measure greenhouse gases. Breathe California of the Bay Area, Youth for a Cool Earth. This involved Lynbrook High School and Julia Baldwin School in the San Jose area. They had 28 school trainings, advocacy campaigns with students, and youth leadership development. And you'll hear more about this project as well.
Do you mind indicating what the grant was as you go along, the amount?
All these grants, yes, Chair, all these grants were for $25,000.
Ah, thanks very much.
Yes, so these are a relatively modest investment, and we feel we got a huge bang for that buck.
Okay, thanks so much.
Yeah, no problem. Strategic Energy Innovations, SEI. They had an air quality education improvement program involving five schools, including in Oakland, Castlemont, and Oakland Tech. They also had Pittsburgh High School and Richmond Vista High School, and I believe San Rafael School. They did community science, air beam measurements with PM 2.5. They collected data at drop-off sites of schools, and they presented at the Bay Area Green Careers Conference and involved over 275 students. Breathe California Golden Gate Public Health Partnership. This is an oxygen O2 for you air quality improvement education program. You'll hear more about this in a minute. This involved West Contra Costa fourth and fifth graders. They had 48 sessions, involved 118 youth and trainings as part of this pilot project. Earth Team, Zero Carbon Schools. This was a program that promoted sustainable youth internships in Richmond High School and Oakland High School. They had 20 events, 9 vehicle miles traveled, carbon dioxide assessments, and 32 in-class training sessions. Hunters Point Family, Bayview Hunters Point. This project is called the People's Harvest, where they planted trees as giveaways for biofilters in homes in the hilltop area of Bayview Hunters Point to help mitigate air pollution. La Clinica de la Raza in Pittsburgh, air quality community advocates. This was based on the Promotores model, worked with the Freedom Breathers in Pittsburgh. San Francisco Bicycle Coalition, we also have representatives here today. They did various community bike builds in the mission, 5 bike builds. They worked in the Vietnamese community and the Latino community and also gave away reclaimed bicycles. Rose Foundation in Oakland, they had a collaborative air quality leadership and development project with Urban Relief and Roots for Resilience. They worked at the Emiliano Zapata Academy. They did tree plantings as pollution mitigation. And they also work with East Bay Bicycle Coalition, and you'll hear about that. And last but not least, we had a mini-grant to Integrarte in Pancho Solenable House in Ciudad Clayta event at Alvarado School, and you'll hear about that as well. So I want to step out of the way now and really invite all of our grantees to come up here, please, and introduce yourselves and then just say a few words about their project, and I think you'll all agree that these were very impactful, important projects. Come on, guys. Yeah, just say your name, and then go ahead and everybody say, go ahead and say your name, and then. Yeah, thank you. Round of applause.
Hello, and thank you for letting us speak today. My name is Aliasha Pete, and I'm the Executive Director for Breathe California of the Bay Area. We are the clean air and healthy lungs leader, and we fight lung disease in all of its forms. The grant we received from BAA-QMD helped Breathe California and the Youth for Cool Earth team in a very special way. Our Youth for Cool Earth program has four major objectives. First, to train the youth as peer leaders, to change student behavior through awareness on how to decrease their carbon footprint, and to share leadership and knowledge skills with additional members of the community, teachers, schools, and so on. Fourth, we have schools adopt a practice that mitigates the effect of air pollution or on climate change. As a staff, we saw such life-changing events because of their environmental literacy and advocacy. Throughout the program, we emphasize to students that you don't have to be older to make a difference. You can do it right now. We serve elementary school through high schoolers, and our program was just amazed at how the youngest classes had such curiosity and a caring for the environment during this 10-week program. One of our favorite moments was during the advocacy model at Julia Baldwin. And a fourth grader came up to us and said, "There is a barren spot near my house. I'm going to convert it into a garden." So she was just really excited about that, and she shared that with us. I just kind of want to finish by saying our team's hope is that students continue to pass on their environmental advocacy policy to or education to policymakers, peers, families, and educators for many years to come. This grant supported BCBA in planning the foundation for the upcoming year, and our plans are to continue to develop more connections with communities and schools and expand our curriculum to include environmental justice components. Finally, these children will partner with our Clean Cities teams and our Idle Free campaigns. Thanks so much for your time.
Thank you very much, and congratulations on your report and also on your job as a provider of very clean air. I appreciate that. Yes, hello.
Good morning. My name is Audrey Bedilia. I'm the Youth Programs Coordinator at Breathe California Golden Gate, which is a sister organization of Breathe Bay Area. And just to give you a little background, we're a lung and environmental health nonprofit founded in San Francisco in 1908. And we've partnered with BACMID for over 25 years on events and air quality initiatives, as well as co-sponsoring state and local legislation. But this was actually the first year that we partnered on a community grant, and we were able to implement our Oxygen for You, or as we call it, the O2 for You, air quality improvement program this past year. It was an amazing opportunity to pilot the program on a smaller scale, and we believe it made a huge impact on the community, particularly by allowing us to bring environmental education to youth in a highly polluted, under-resourced, and medically underserved low-income community, primarily in West Contra Costa. By the end of the program, some things that we were able to identify was that the youth increased their awareness and scientific knowledge on air pollution. They got their family involved, and they felt more confident that they can have a positive impact on air quality and health. And most importantly, youth were able to identify concrete ways that they can take the knowledge that they learned and turn it into action. And so from some of the information that we collected from our youth and our participants, we found some notable highlights. 89% of our respondents felt confident talking to their family about the environment and health. 80% of our respondents can name at least three things that they can do to reduce air pollution and save energy. And I'm sorry, I forgot to note that this was a program that we brought to Richmond for fourth and fifth graders. 75% of them responded that they understood that air pollution can increase asthma symptoms. And as we know, in that particular area, they're disproportionately affected by the air pollution and have higher rates of asthma. And as I mentioned, 75% of them believe that they can take action in their community to improve the environment. So it's really creating new advocates. And so overall, we believe it was such an amazing learning experience, not only for the youth that were able to take part in our program, but for our organization as well.
This, we truly appreciate the opportunity to bring such a much-needed program to our youth in Richmond, and we really look forward to continuing to strengthen the program and help it grow again in this upcoming year. Yeah. Thank you.
Thank you very much. It's good to hear there are two lung association groups in our right in our local area. Greetings.
Thank you for giving me the opportunity to present today. My name is Amy Jolly. I am from the Center for Climate Protection. I run their youth leadership program called Eco to School. We work with students in Sonoma County and across the Bay Area on how to calculate their school's commute carbon footprint and then plan and implement actions to reduce that carbon footprint. So as a result of our Jim Carrey grant, we were able to serve two schools, Roseland University Prep and Sonoma Valley High Schools. We supported one intern and six youth advisory board members. Those youth advisory board members all volunteer between 20 and 50 hour volunteer hours and go through an extensive youth leadership development training. As a result of their training and volunteer hours, 2,400 students at those two schools received climate literacy education, and 50% of those students, so over 1,000 students, participated in at least one behavior change activity that resulted in 7.5 tons of CO2 from being saved. In addition to those kind of very, very measurable or tangible results, there were some other results of this grant that are equally beneficial. One is we developed a connection with Hunters Point family. We're able to expand our program into the Hunters Point Bayview area. We were able to bring students to present at the Youth for Environment and Sustainability Conference, as well as join the YES Leadership Board, and we were able to provide a student leader to come speak at the Air District's Bay Area Climate Forward event. I want to give a particular thank you to some of the board members, Teresa Barrett, who just recently, without her, she helped build our program in Petaluma and provided some connections so we could expand into Petaluma this year. And of course, Jack Broadbent and Shirley Zane, without whom our program would cease to function. And we are really hoping to continue to renew and expand and enrich our relationship with the Air District. And I want to leave you with a quote, with a couple quotes from a couple of our students. So the Youth Advisory Board is an open, fun, and electrifying group of kids who help each other grow. We are gathered around the fundamental mission of stopping climate change, and the movement grows stronger as we develop our individual leadership skills. And one other student, I'm going to have to turn this upside down, who said to us, "Be aware that you are capable of great things. Be aware that you are capable of shaping your own future, that you have the power to change and the power to do this work." And she says that in relationship to her peers, but I'm going to say that in relationship to all of us here in this room. Thank you for the work that you do.
Thanks, and congratulations, Teresa, for a good call out about what you did as well, and anyone else who has been involved with this. We can tell who you are because I can see very clearly that you are Daniel Rosales.
Correct. I'm Dan. I'm from American Canyon High School, lower part of Napa, and I was looking for I found out about the YES conference last year. And so I wanted my students to participate, but I wanted them to make it a real world project. So in January, all of the science department worked on a project on climate change. Each discipline looked at climate change in through their own discipline eyes. So physics looked for the physics of climate change, and we went into forest fires and why they occur and why they're getting more frequent and hotter. And chemistry looked at the ocean. environmental, looked at the obvious environmental impacts. So the whole school's science department was working on climate change in January for about a month. Then we presented at the S conference, and also the STEM club. We received a grant that we bought, purchased Raspberry Pi computers, which are the latest thing. They are so small, but they're a complete computer. They have HDMI, they have Wi-Fi, they have Bluetooth, they have ports where you can put the keyboard in and the monitor in, and this one is a self-contained one. This is a tablet Raspberry Pi that will be capable of measuring greenhouse gases. It has this little hat that has all the sensors on it and the particulate matter sensor, and we're hoping to measure greenhouse gases in the Napa Valley, and hopefully we'll be able to talk the Vine Trail into letting us post them on the Vine Trail so we can measure the gases down the valley. So the grant was very helpful, and without it, we wouldn't have been able to get started, and now we're going to apply for a new grant. Thank you.
Thank you so much. And with the goal of keeping as many of our members here as we can, if you can hopefully limit your comments to a couple of minutes as we go forward, that would be very helpful. We're going to start losing members. We've lost a couple already. Thanks.
My name is Najari Smith. I'm the founding director of Rich City Rides.
My name is Imani, and I'm the videographer at Rich City Rides.
And I'm Laura Cohen. I'm the Western Region Director of Rails to Trails Conservancy. Good morning. Our project was Bikes, Buses, BART, and Breathing, Richmond Rides. And our program was all about, it was a partnership between Rails to Trails and Rich City Rides. It was a program of bike rides and educational workshops to help people connect their transportation choices with air quality and with personal community health. And we did a number of events over 2016 and 2017. We're really happy with the results. We actually did a short video, a five-minute video that David mentioned, which we will be sharing with you. We will post it on our website, and I think the plan is to post it on the Air District website. So hopefully you have a chance to take a look at that. It really captures the flavor and the joy and the community that came out of this. And I just want to share one short quote from the video. Richmond City Councilman Ben Choi came along on one of our rides, and we interviewed him at the end, and he said, "Well, I have to admit, I have a bike, but I probably haven't been on it in 3 years. You guys got me out today." And he says, "I realized, you know, I should be doing this all the time. It's what I should be doing for air quality. And I'm going on record today saying I'm going to start doing this every week." And we had those kind of responses from kids, from families, from everyone. And I want Najari just to share with you a few statistics of the impact that the project had.
Yes, so we were able to promote this through this activity, through this project. We were able to host two bikes, buses, and BART. This is an educational event that shows people how to bring their bicycles on AC Transit and the BART. We hosted two opening day for trails events. We were able to host 10 May Team Bike Challenge events. It's like a competition to see how many folks can rack up the most miles. And we had over 259 individuals riding bikes with us over the course of this grant cycle. We also hosted a series of rides leading up to each May Team Bike Challenge to get as much participation as possible.
And yeah, we just want to thank you for the support. It was a really cost-effective, impactful program. We hope you do more of it. We'd love to partner with you and look forward to sharing the video. And I want to give a huge shout-out to Imani, who is an aspiring videographer and film maker who helped us put that together. I think you'll enjoy it. Thank you very much.
Thanks a lot.
Thank you.
Good morning. My name is Carlos Zambrano. I coordinate the New Voices Arising program through the Rose Foundation.
Hello, my name is Angel, and I'm an intern with the Growing Justice.
Hello, my name is Xavier Rabin. I work
I'm an intern at New Voices Arising, and I also took the Growing Justice class at Emilio Street Academy.
So our Growing Justice class taught local Oakland students at an alternative high school all about environmental justice, air quality issues, particularly that air quality issues that affect their areas. And I want to give Angel an opportunity to speak on his experience with that.
When I first joined Growing Justice, I had no relationship with my environment. But since I joined, it's been a complete roller coaster. I learned the way of nature is something that I would like to educate others about. A lot of people don't know that trees benefit us in many ways. And we planted trees at my school not so long ago, in Emiliano Zapata Street Academy. Not so long ago, all the trees that shaded our school were cut down to build a new building in the community. So what we did was plant trees in a location that are unhealthy with bad chemicals in the air, such as diesel particulate. Our trees fill to the air and make it healthier for us to breathe. If we plant trees everywhere, then we would have a better, healthier community environment, not just for me, but for everyone else. And thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you very much, everyone. Would you like to say something, Xavier?
I recently moved to Oakland, and ever since I went to Street Academy, they really were welcoming the Growing Justice class, really, like, made me feel at home and got me to learn more stuff about the environment and how, like, climate change is, like, how much of an impact it is going to take, not just, like in general, but just like in California, especially with like sea levels rising, and taught me how important it is to really make an effort to clean the air quality to help with climate change, because it really is a thing that's happening.
So thank you very much, and we really hope to be considered again for the next grant cycle. Thank you.
Good. Thanks very much.
Good morning. I'm Deyanira Calahorrano from Integrarte San Francisco. I am the founder of this organization. It's a very new organization. As a mom and member of the community on Mission District, we were able to impact more than 100 families and kids at the school where we are. And they were learning about biking and the choices for transportation that are going to be friendly with the environment. The highlight from this small project was that other mothers, Latino, from the Latino families, came to me and they told me, these are the kind of activities that we need, and we thank you for this activity and count on me. Now we want to work with you. So I was really pleased with that outcome, because that was one of the main objectives, engaging families in the education. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, board members, for hearing that presentation.
You're welcome. Could I ask you one thing? You mentioned 11 counties at the beginning. Are there
six counties?
Six counties.
Yes.
Okay, great.
11 grantees in six counties.
Thank you.
We didn't grow two new counties.
And you did this for just $25,000 a grant, right?
That was a maximum, yes.
Right. That's impressive. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you to all of the those who are involved for coming this morning and sharing that with us. I very much appreciate it.
All right.
Okay. At that, with it, Marcy, was there any public comment on that? I thought there was, but I was mistaken. There is nothing. Okay. In that case, then, we're going to move up to number 17, update on cap and trade and related legislation, and this will go to Mr. Brogdon.
Well, good morning, Madam Chair, members of the board. Item number 17 is an update on some recent legislation that we thought it was appropriate to brief the board in open session and have a essentially an information item here for you. As you know, we've been all working on a very important rulemaking, 1216, which sought to cap the greenhouse gases from our five refineries. Just this last week, the governor signed two important bills that frankly changes the entire landscape for us. And one is AB 398, which extends the cap and trade program. And the other is AB 617, which we believe is one of the most consequential legislations that have been recently enacted that will continue to help us address the our local community issues in here in the Bay Area. I'd like the opportunity to walk you through both these bills, and I understand the time situation, Madam Chair, so I'll be as concise as possible.
Thank you.
So, Marcy, here's just an overview. I'll give a summary of 398, specifically mentioning our regulatory authority since it speaks to that. Assembly Bill 617, give you a summary of that. And then for those of you that might have some questions about the sources and just how it affects us, I've just provided some key information. We're at the outsets of trying to understand these two bills, how it's going to affect us. We're going to need to sit down with the California Resources Board, their staff. So there's a lot of work ahead of us. And I'll lay out a work plan for AB 617. And then finally, just wrap up with regard to the priorities as I see the district moving forward as it relates to these two key bills. With regard to AB 398, it extends the cap and trade program from 2020 to 2030. Some important parts of 398 is that it, for those sources that need to rely on offsets to meet its obligation, it requires now that half of those offsets be generated in California. It also set a price ceiling in order to be able to guard against price shocks in the offset markets. And most importantly, and I'll talk to you about this in the next slide, it prevents and preempts the local air districts from requiring CO2 reductions from sources that are regulated under the cap and trade program. Also, it eliminated CARB's ability to undertake some direct emission reduction measures on the refineries and oil and gas industry. This bill was considered to be an urgency bill, and it became effective the date that the governor signed it. Marcy. Specifically with regard to our authority, AB 398 preempts the district from requiring CO2 reductions from sources that are regulated under the cap and trade program. I'll show you a slide on how many sources we have. But essentially about 90% of the CO2 emissions from stationary sources come from these major sources that are regulated under the cap and trade program. It does retain our authority to regulate methane and other CO2 emissions from sources under the cap and trade program. And it also retains our authority to regulate all GHG emissions that are outside the cap and trade program, of which there's a number of ubiquitous sources, namely residential sources. You have small combustion operations that are located nearly everywhere that we permit, and they themselves are also important sources that will need to be addressed as we move forward. Next slide. There were two bills, as I mentioned. One is extending the cap and trade program, but also a companion bill that was designed to be able to address local community issues as it relates to air quality in and around different communities in California. And let me lay out this bill. This bill, actually, I believe, has as much impact as the other one. The other one takes away our authority. This one lays out a whole set of new requirements for the air district. Very specifically, and we think it's a very good thing, it increases our penalty ceilings for stationary source violations. Right now, our strict liability limit is 1,000, and it raises it up to 5,000 per violation. So that's a good thing. It requires the local districts to develop a schedule for identifying and implementing best available control technology requirements on sources that impact the communities in and around that are in these areas that are affected. And so we're to essentially prioritize the existing sources that have not gone through any type of BART and upgrading, if you will, over the last, I believe it's 5 years, or is it 7 years? Yeah, it prioritizes the ones that are more than 7 years, or more than 10 years old. I'm sorry, from 2007 earlier. But frankly, as we look at this, we're going to be looking at barked across all the categories. The schedule is required to include the older ones, but I think we'll be working on rules for all of them as we go on.
A very important part of 617 is it requires community and fence line monitoring in some of the high priority locations. What that means necessarily, what is high priority locations, still to be defined. What does community and fence line monitoring mean? That still needs to be defined. If you recall, and I know you all know this, we have been requiring fence line monitoring for some time. We've actually gone down a path of requiring and putting in place neighborhood monitoring near some of the big sources in the Bay Area. Indeed, we adopted a schedule to have these sources pay for that community monitoring. So we're actually ahead of the rest of California in this regard. So that's an important consideration as we discuss seeking to be able to achieve additional resources to pay for some of this. It requires that the districts, in coordination with CARB, develop what's called community emission reduction plans and programs in the high cumulative impact areas. It also has some other additional requirements that establishes some uniform emissions reporting for sources that are subject to the cap and trade program. Frankly, this is something we're doing already. But also, as I mentioned, it is not an urgency bill, but is effective January 1st of 2018. Marcy? Let me talk to you a little bit about some of the key information that, so we have 78 facilities that are subject to the cap and trade program, 44 of which are subject to the emission reduction requirements, and 34 are subject to the reporting requirements. So amongst those facilities, we generally have identified 138 source categories. Now, source category is a type of class of type of equipment. You can think of it that way. And typically, there is a rule for every source category, or very close to. And why this is important, because as we seek to be able to identify best available retrofit control technology for all the sources in the Bay Area, we'll do it on a source category by source category basis. So you can start to see the potential impact that this bill has on the district. And so there's as many as about over 7,000 individual permitted sources amongst those source categories.
The only thing I was going to add, Jack, is of these source categories, almost all already have a rule that applies to them. So the exercise is to go back and look to make sure that whatever the requirements are the most stringent they can be under the BARC definition.
Right. And so that's the best way to think about it. You might be asking, what is BARC? This is something that, frankly, it is a term of art that now is part of law that we're going to have to work with CARB to identify and define, frankly. What this does do, which is a good thing, is it also requires CARB to establish and maintain a clearinghouse for BARC. So that way we're all starting to make sure we're speaking the same language, meaning all the local air districts in California are going to be defining BARC similarly. It's been our past practice to do that. This actually starts to formalize it in state law. And so, as Mr. Bunger mentioned, we're going to need to go through and identify on a source category by source category basis what is now BARC, and then prioritize our rulemaking to actually implement those emission reduction requirements. And so it is going to be an impact to our rulemaking, and I'll talk to you about that in just a moment, but it has a fairly substantial impact on the district here moving forward. Now, I'll just mention as an aside, for us, it's a little bit more straightforward in the sense that we'll go through and identify which are the key source categories, which haven't been updated, which one can we expedite. For South Coast, I'll just mention, why is it more impactful for other organizations like South Coast? They have a reclaim program. They have a program where they've allowed emissions trading back and forth. So it's much more complicated for South Coast. They're going to have to go in and identify by facility, by specific piece of equipment, and then seek to be able to identify rulemaking efforts to undo that emissions trading program. So it has a big impact on both ourselves, South Coast, and San Joaquin, which is frankly where most of the sources are located at. Marcy, next slide. This slide is, I know, sorry for the small type here. It gives you a little bit of a facility breakdown of the types of facilities that are affected. And Marcy, if you can show the next one. This just shows you by county the breakdown. You'll notice that it kind of follows where our stationary sources are located at. A fairly good-sized chunk is in Contra Costa, Alameda, and Santa Clara counties, obviously. So, okay, next slide. This is a slide that I attempted to put in here to try to show you where they located. These are the facilities as it relates to our care communities. And you'll notice a very key point here is we have a number of facilities that are located in and around all over the Bay Area. They may not necessarily be in the same place that the communities are located, meaning the impacted communities, the disproportionately impacted communities, communities that we have for many, many years, actually decades, been seeking to be able to address the disparities in these communities. Primarily what we've been doing to address these communities is through our grant program. We've been targeting our Carl Moyer program and our I-bond monies and all sorts of other funding revenue to try to clean up the diesel particulate sources. Now, there is a discussion that seeks to be able to link the cap and trade with the disproportionately impacted communities. The problem in the Bay Area, this is also the same problem in San Joaquin, same problem in South Coast, is there's not necessarily a connection between the communities that we're concerned about and the fact that we have these big, large sources. As an example, the largest amount of risk, when you take a look at toxic risk in the Bay Area, is in West Oakland. Why? Because we have ships, trains, and trucks all impacting that community, and they're not part of the cap and trade program. So I just point that out to you. The next slide gives you a map of the facilities as it relates to a tool that has been relied upon at the state level called Cal Enviro Screen. This has been a sore subject with the Bay Area because we don't believe that they have historically identified the appropriate communities. This is 3.0. And they've done a better job with this version of Cal Enviro Screen, but still, there still remains to be some work at the state level in identifying what we believe are the appropriate communities that need to be addressed and need to have additional resources. We need to clean up the sources that are contributing to these communities. Marcy? So I mentioned rulemaking. Between now and the end of the year, we have some rulemaking commitments that this will not necessarily impact, but I did want to remind the board of things that we have committed to undertake. One, we have an important rulemaking, which is in October, which basically addresses some issues that have been raised by EPA to fix some permitting requirements. And that's Reg 2.1, 2.2, 2.6, if I recall. And I want to highlight the second bullet on this. We have an important rulemaking, which is our toxics rule. We're proposing, if you recall, under this rule to require sources to meet a 10 in a million risk. This, what I believe, is one of the most important public health benefits we can provide and public health initiatives we can undertake. We have decided to staff, based on the comments we've received, to recirculate the CEQA document. We're going to go back out with a CEQA document, I believe, at the end of this month, beginning of next month, with a neg deck. That's just based on all the comments we received on the rulemaking, and we'll have that in front of you at the first meeting in November. We have some PM rules that we have been seeking to put in place, some adjustments and amendments to further reduce PM from all sorts of different sources in the Bay Area. Those rules are now on track to get it back in February timeframe. Now is where you start to see the impacts of this new legislation. When you start to take a look at 2018 through 2023, these BARCT requirements are going to impact the rulemaking schedule, and we'll have to, frankly, redefine what we do and where we put our resources. I do also want to highlight, a commitment that this organization has made, and that is a 20% reduction of the refinery sector by 2020. We need to go back and revisit some of that because we're not meeting that full 20%. We're only, I believe, 17% at this point. And so there's some additional rulemakings to be able to shore up that commitment, meet that commitment. Finally, there's a whole set of methane emission reduction rules that we want to and that are on our calendar, and that's for next year. Marcy? I mentioned 617. It requires a fairly detailed work plan that I plan to bring back to the board. But we need to do some additional analysis, as Mr. Bunger has mentioned, about what does BARCT mean. We have, and that what kind of rulemaking schedule would that result in? We're going to need to sit down in a coordinated fashion with the state to identify the appropriate level of air monitoring on a community-by-community basis, and then also seek to be able to establish a process by which we'll develop community emission reduction plans. Part of that is just upgrading inventories, but also there's a variety of efforts that's underway that we need to upgrade the emissions inventory effort to be consistent across districts. And so that way the public is best served so they can compare a source here as the same similar source down in Southern California, for example. A lot of that's going to require a lot of interagency collaboration and community engagement particularly. I will be bringing back a timeline for that for the board for its consideration. Most concerning about this bill, though, has to do with the costs and the impacts that this does impose on the district itself. There's only so much you can recover by fees on the sources themselves. We're going to need funding from the state. As I mentioned, you have communities in the Bay Area which aren't, but they are very much of a community concern, but there's not a large stationary source impacting that community. So we're going to need to figure out how we can have the state pay for the monitoring, the establishment of community plans. And so one important step we need to take now is to sit down and talk with the governor's office, talk with the legislators, either through getting a bill and or through prioritization of the greenhouse gas funds. Lastly, as your executive officer, as the staff, I wanted to just highlight what we believe are the priorities moving forward. You adopted an important plan last April, and we believe that that plan does lay out a whole set of priorities and requirements in terms of as we move forward, and that it is something we need to keep in mind as we seek to be able to figure out these BARCT requirements as it relates to our rulemaking calendar. And I think it changes the implementation of the Clean Air Plan, and I'll bring that back to the executive committee and the full board in a future date. But I think the most important priority that I think is clear to us is we need to be able to seek real substantive health benefits for the Bay Area community. I think 1118 does that. I think it begins to establish a standard, and it begins to bring the relative contribution of the major stationary sources under control, their relative contribution to communities in and around the Bay Area by having them meet a 10 in a million risk standard. It needs to go hand in hand with other efforts like reducing diesel particulate in these communities. That's very, very critical as well. I want to highlight also an important commitment you made back in June, and that is to develop and implement a PM plan as it relates to some of the refinery work. And that's not lost on us either. That is something we're going to bring back to you at the September board meeting, but it's a plan on how we're going to address some of the PM issues associated with refinery operations as other stationary sources as well. On the last sub-bullet there, I want to just mention something, and I don't want to get too far into the weeds, but I do want to point out something that's really an important technical issue that we're struggling with. And that has to do with the toxicity associated with PM from stationary sources. Right now, we have a very good idea of the relative toxicity of diesel particulate. That is something that we apply when we try to undertake our health risk assessments. When we require facilities to control their diesel emissions, we know what the impact is. Now, the particulate, though, that is from non-diesel operations, say a furnace at a refinery, is something it's not appropriate to take the same level or the same toxicity standard and apply it to those PM emissions. We need to come up with a different and the appropriate what's called a REL, or a reference exposure level for that what we refer to as undifferentiated PM. And I just highlight that technical issue for you because I believe the Advisory Council can help us here. I think the Advisory Council with its scientific folks there can be tasked with getting the right kind of scientists coming to present to them to answer this question. We've formally asked the state to help us out here. They have responded that they'll deal with it when they can, but frankly, this, in our minds, is a very important priority that needs to be addressed. Finally, as I mentioned, we need to secure the appropriate funding for all of this. As you can tell, this has a big impact on us, and frankly, the governor, during his testimony in front of the Senate EQ and elsewhere, has said he will provide funding and we need to keep this governor's to fulfill his promise to this district, because he specifically spoke to this district that he will follow through on his promise. And so that, to me, is something that we need to hold their feet to the fire, if you will, because it, all the requirements I've laid out for you are going to require some significant funding. With that, Madam Chair, that completes my presentation. I hope that gives you a summary of the activities that have happened as it relates to some of our refinery cap work, and we're glad to answer any questions.
Thank you, and also let me mention the hours that our staff has spent on this issue in Sacramento, on the phone, any variety of other ways. Several of them have been at it literally 24/7 until this bill was signed last week. So there has been a very, as you said, real and substantive effort made to stay involved and be influential. So I know that we have people from the public who wish to speak. Are there searing questions from us first before we start?
I'm willing to wait till after the speakers.
Yes. If you don't mind waiting, why don't we go through? We have seven speakers.
12.
And have 12 speakers. Okay. I think with 12 speakers, we need to limit it to 2 minutes, because we're going to start to lose those who we could influence otherwise. So if I don't see any objections from the board, let's start with those speakers.
Shall I call six at a time?
Please.
Okay.
And I would urge them, if you don't need to talk the full 2 minutes, we will tend to keep a number of directors here a longer period of time. Thank you.
Okay, I have Andrea Soto, Sarah Greenwald, Claire Broom, Shoshana Wexler, David Gassman, and Steve Nadell for the first round.
Thank you.
Good morning, Madam Chair, members of the board. Andres Soto with Communities for a Better Environment in Richmond. And so I was in Sacramento the day of the environmental quality hearing on both the bills, AB 398. And, of course, we were opposed to both bills on a number of grounds. And it was, once again, a fascinating sausage-making process. Unfortunately, they were using some rotten meat in the deal. And the preemption of local air district authority was one thing that had us all singing in the same choir. And but the bill was passed, it was rammed through, and one of the things that we began to notice as the lawyers looked over the law is that the restriction is simply on reductions of greenhouse gases, carbon dioxide. It does not restrict your authority to cap these emissions. And so we do not believe that 1216 should be put in the dustbin of history. We think it should move forward. You should go forward with the final EIR, bring it back, and vote on it, because it is within your authority. It is the direction and the will of the board, and has been. And we look forward to participating in that process and having you guys bring back 1216 and exert your authority that remains with you in these very troubling and difficult times. Thank you.
Thank you for coming. Greetings.
Hello, my name's Sarah Greenwald, 350 Bay Area. I'll keep it short. I know you're worried. So am I, because the carbon count is way over what we can stand. The oceans are acidifying, okay? So do not be discouraged. AB 398 is a bump. It should not derail the committee that you set up at the last meeting. You need to direct the staff to move forward with the narrowest interpretation of the limits of your authority. We cannot allow staff to keep going down the road of rubber stamping permits. Caps are the way to put a stop to this practice. No more infrastructure improvements unless they specifically reduce emissions. Thank you.
Thanks very much. Next speaker.
Good morning. I'm Claire Broom, a physician and a professor of public health. First, I'd like to second Chair Nissa's comments and thank the Air District for engaging in the debate on AB 398, asserting the Air District's authority and commitment to clean air and to protection of health. Secondly, I'd like to urge the board to follow Sutton's law. Go where the money is. To meet your mandate, the refineries cannot increase emissions. You heard Reverend Scott. We are in a crisis situation, and the refineries are a major, major source of emissions and greenhouse gases in the Bay Area. So, how? I hope you all have a chance or have already read the letter from our coalition. The plain language of AB 398 bans, and I quote, an emission reduction rule by local air districts. The board, you, still have the authority to limit refinery emissions at current levels. That's not a reduction. Rule 1216 is still legal, and I would argue it's more necessary than ever. In May, you voted to proceed with the EIR for 1216. Please continue your leadership. We all need that backstop. The refinery emissions should not increase as the staff works on all the other measures you've heard about. Please continue your leadership and proceed with Rule 1216. Thank you.
Thank you for coming. Next speaker.
I cede my time to see Maida.
You don't wish to speak?
Yes. I'm ceding my time.
You can only have 2 minutes. I'm so sorry.
That's fine. My name is Steve Nadell. I represent the Sunflower Alliance, which also now coordinates the fossil fuel infrastructure opposition of the 350 Bay Area. As we've made clear, nothing has really changed. The refineries are still rigorously pursuing an expansion into tar sands, as witness the maritime terminal proposal to triple the number of ships coming in, which are designed to bring in tar sands. That will have an undoubted health impact, which our public health speakers have presented clearly. And I commend the Air Board for recognizing that problem and making that a priority. But they cannot achieve the goals, as people have stated, if we allow emissions to increase from the refinery. So the caps are essential. And the original proposal, which called for a cap not only on greenhouse gas emissions, but particulates, needs to be approved. And I just want to leave with one last comment, because I do have to question the issue of relying on the Technical Advisory Committee for guidance on this issue. Let me remind you, that is the same committee that said particulate emissions from the refineries have no public health impact on local communities. And when I asked Jack Broadbent about that, he said, oh, they're just an advisory committee. So I think until that committee is more representative of the environmental justice and health impacts of local communities by these refineries, do not rely on them for your advice. Take the leadership from your community, youth, and elders who are speaking about their real health impacts.
Thank you for speaking. Our next speaker.
Hello, I'm David Gassman. I'm representing the Green Action for Health and Environmental Justice, and we are a signatory to this letter, and I simply want to associate that organization with everything you have just heard. I see absolutely no need to repeat it. I think this letter makes a compelling argument why you should go ahead and proceed with Regulation 12, Rule 1216, as it has been presented. Thank you very much.
Thank you for speaking. Marcy, you have the next set.
The remaining speakers are Bob Brown, Charles Davidson, Roth Ali, Bill Pinkham, Jed Holtzman, Richard Gray, and Colin Cook Miller.
Thank you.
Good morning, Chair Niss and members. Bob Brown with the Western States Petroleum Association. Today I want to speak a little bit on the process of the last couple of board meetings in particular. On behalf of WISPA and our members, I hope we can have a more predictable and consistent testimony process than we've experienced in recent meetings. We respect the complexity and varied demands you have before this body, but the public testimony process in the last few months especially has left our members and associates very frustrated. In the last two board meetings, you had a major rule up for consideration and correctly anticipated a large number of people who wanted to testify. As such, you set the rules as 1 minute per person with the ability to assign several people to one spokesperson to consolidate additional time, which made a lot of sense, and it was something we were all prepared for. But in reality, that 1 minute was later reduced to 30 seconds, and groups were limited to no more than 3 minutes, and ultimately less than that. Our members prepared thoughtful presentations with science-based facts, but were greatly limited in their ability to properly present that information based on last-minute procedural changes. And a number of associates and businesses taking their morning and early afternoon to be here had time to communicate their name, organization, and little else. When the agenda has this level of interest in important measures and with respect to 1118 coming up for consideration, we respectfully ask the board stick to their established rules so that all sides can plan accordingly and have a proper say. I also want to mention the agenda for the Air District Board typically reflects a much longer time frame, but it seems to consistently end between 12:30 and 1 based on other board members' commitments. We understand that more times than not, the agenda can easily end by midday, and I certainly don't want to advocate for long meetings that wouldn't be necessary, but when major issues are up for consideration, we would hope that board members could stay for the duration and completely hear out the arguments, pro and con. Thank you.
It's a good comment, and I'd be delighted to talk to you about it later. We are very limited in keeping our quorum, and we cannot vote if we don't have a quorum. Sir.
Charles Davidson, Hercules Sunflower Alliance. I support moving forward on the refinery-wide GHG cap and 13.1 the per barrel cap. Contrary to the misconception of some, the 60 environmental and environmental justice organizations opposed to SB 398 are not disagreeing in this instance today about cap and trade's validity per se. Rather, the disagreement is to whether SB 398 will make a significant dent in the eightfold increase in tar sands projected by both industry and the 2014 Borealis study commissioned by NRDC and NextGen. If industry plans go as they hope, Canadian tar sands, the heaviest and dirtiest global crude type, will constitute 25% of Bay Area crude. Moreover, the massive increase in tar sands will bring in locally an exponential increase in particulate matter. Why is this so, and why does it matter? When surface mines, tar sands, as opposed to any other crude, is a solid substance that must be heated to extreme temperatures and dissolved in solvents just to refine it. Up to 40% of tar sands becomes unrefinable petroleum coke, which is the number one particulate matter and black carbon precursor, and which is continually burned into the atmosphere at all refineries in non-boiler operations. For example, never going to market, pet coke is completely combusted by the hundreds of tons daily at each refinery, such as FCC's, the largest unit at most refineries, and at the P66 carbon plant, which burns a large portion of the raw pet coke completely, 20 to 30% going directly into the atmosphere and amounting to almost 500,000 pounds of pet coke daily. The plant is the largest SOx emitter in Northern California. Already, P66 wants to bring in by ship the equivalent of 2 mile-long tar sands trains per day from BC pipelines, support the refinery-wide emissions cap.
Thank you. Our next speaker.
Good morning, board. My name is Roth Alai. I'm a community organizer for the Asian Pacific Environmental Network in Richmond, California. And just wanted to remind the board that, you know, the reason why APAN is here is that this is an environmental justice issue. Our community lives next to the refinery. When something happens to the refinery, when there's a flare or a fire, or even in like what happened in a few months ago in Benicia, we're the community that has to go inside, shelter in place, tape up our windows, and have to question the air that we breathe. So just to remind folks that, you know, the issue why we're here is for our local health. And we also support CBE's letter that says that what this board has said before and throughout the 5 years, and I disagree with the gentleman from WISPA, that this we've had a very, very thorough process. I've had to hear both sides over and over, and also hearing that we still have the authority, that the board still has the authority to put in a cap that prevents emission increases, not necessarily touch and deal with what the state is trying to do with emission reductions. So our community is here in coalition with others. We want to make sure that this board is representing us and is valuing and prioritizing local and community health. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Next speaker.
Good afternoon, directors. My name is Richard Gray. I'm with 350 Bay Area. At the last hearing on 1216, staff came forward not with a cap on emissions, but with a 20% increase in emissions based on the permits they have been approving over the last 4 or 5 years for projects which have not yet been built or utilized. The cap that we seek would put a stop to the staff administratively approving permits which help oil companies gear up for refining tar sands crude. The Phillips 66 Wharf project, seeking to triple tar sands crude by ship, is just the latest. The staff, by the way, never rescinded this permit when the EIR was rejected in court. Please stop enabling this industry by allowing staff to rubber stamp these projects. We need a moratorium on new infrastructure projects facilitating the tar sands invasion. Capping CO2 would do that. You have a choice in how you interpret the language of AB 398. The staff would have you back down and not fulfill your commitment to us to finish the 1216 approval process. But you have an opportunity to assert that this legislation does not preclude a limit on CO2 that 1216 would set in place. This action, which is most consistent with your mission and with protecting your constituents, particularly those in refinery communities. This is not the staff's choice, it's your choice. Please do the right thing for your community. Let's move forward on 1216. Thank you.
Next speaker. Thank you all for being succinct, I appreciate it.
Good morning, I'm Bill Pinkham. I'm one of the founders of 350 East Bay, and I'm on their transportation committee now, and the Sunflower Alliance. And I will not repeat all that's been said about keeping to the reduction of clause of the 398. I'd just like to say my other big hat is bicycle advocacy. I'm a former member of the board of Bike East Bay, which, by the way, is the new name of the East Bay Bicycle Coalition, on the Richmond Bicycle Pedestrian Advisory Committee, and I'm the citizen rep from West County on the Contra Costa County Bicycle Advisory Committee. And I can tell you that those of us who ride around are really concerned about the air quality and how much we get. There is no sheltering in place on your bicycle. So keep up your good work. Thank you.
Thank you. Last two speakers.
Good morning, everyone. My name is Colin Cook Miller, and I'm here today representing the Oakland Climate Action Coalition. We're a coalition of 27 community-based organizations, including unions and green businesses, as well as social and environmental justice groups in Oakland. It's good to see you all. And I'm here because we also sign on to the letter sent to you by Communities for a Better Environment. And we're really facing a critical issue, not only the climate crisis, but also environmental injustice and environmental racism by allowing staff to rubber stamp refinery expansions. By not capping those refinery emissions, this agency would be going against your promise to advance environmental justice for communities that are struggling to breathe. By this agency's own analysis in June, caps were deemed a necessity. Without those caps, refinery emissions increases are likely, and the district and state would fail our emissions reduction goals. Legally, plain reading of the law, AB 398, says that BACMED has the ability and responsibility to enforce the caps. AB 398 does not preempt BACMED from implementing caps on greenhouse gases. Even the California Assembly Bill floor analysis of the bill makes it clear that there is a difference between carbon dioxide reduction efforts and greenhouse gas caps that limit increases in emissions. And with existing statute, AB 32 defines a reduction measure as being different from a limit or a cap to prevent emissions increases. So if you don't listen to the law, listen to the communities who are struggling to breathe. Listen to the people who are facing disproportionate levels of cancer, heart disease, asthma, and other respiratory issues. Please listen to your conscience. Please listen and consider the impact your decision will have on the next seven generations. Thank you.
Thank you. We have one, two, three speakers left. Two. Thank you.
Thank you very much, directors. Jed Holtzman, Senior Policy Analyst for 350 Bay Area. I guess the first thing I have to say is that the process for AB 398, which we opposed, was extremely similar to the process that we're seeing in Washington for trying to negotiate in secret and then ram through a health care bill. And I think that Jerry Brown and everyone who went along with this should be ashamed of themselves. Speaking practically to the impacts and implications on the Air District, number one, really quickly, your permit program. Staff's suggestion to the Rule 2 changes was to set the threshold for GHGs to trigger BACT pretty high. We asked for it to be lowered under the argument that while emissions per source may be low, if there are a lot of those sources, for example, backup generators, the cumulative impact of all of those can add up to a significant emissions burden that should be looked at from the front end in your permit program. We would argue that given that you can no longer even apply reductions to sources that are under the cap and trade program anymore, we definitely think that this needs to be reduced so that you can actually capture under your permit back changes sources that you actually are still having the authority to regulate without being preempted. Secondly, to AB 617, we heard that the BARCT requirements are going to take a lot of staff time and are going to need to change up the rulemaking calendar. This cannot retard our progress on the Clean Air Plan and the Regional Climate Protection Strategy. I appreciate the executive director specifically calling out the Clean Air Plan. The parts of it that have not been preempted by this bill, we need to go full speed ahead on. And so we need to get money from the state to hire more staff if that's what it takes. But we cannot slow down on this. Lastly, as you've heard, a cap is not a reduction. Thus, AB 398 does not affect 1216, and 1216 needs to move forward as discussed at length so that we can all never talk about it again. Thank you.
Okay. Mr. Karras, our last speaker.
Greg Karras, Communities for a Better Environment. Thank you. No doubt the district was correct to stand with us and oppose this terrible, dirty deal that got rammed through in Sacramento. So the good news is that you can adopt the caps now. The bad news is that the threatened and continuing expansions of refinery and tar sands infrastructure that could be locked in through 2050 are continuing to be permitted, rubber stamped, if you will, under your permitting rules by your agency. I was here with you. I know that you were worried about being preempted, that the majority of this board, after almost 5 years of process, was ready to adopt these essential caps last time that you all met. Could you put up the last slide of the district's presentation, please? And that you said and you documented that that this was essential because of the climate implications of allowing refinery emissions to increase. I want to draw your attention to the toxic co-pollutants. Undifferentiated PM. Think about ultra-fine PM. This is essentially not controlled at all unless you control the GHG emissions and stop them from increasing. And this is a killer, and it's causing toxic racism in our communities. And we are not going to stand for a long study that could take decades while we should be capping the GHG emissions and the co-pollutants now. It would not be acceptable. I know that most of you believe that. Please tell us today that we can expect in September and October to be having the promised full hearing to consider adopting the caps. Please do that today. Thank you.
Thank you all for being here. We too are frustrated, so we totally understand that. It's good to hear from everyone, and now it's the board's turn. So, comments from the board at this point. Who are we starting with? Rebecca?
Thank you. First, just to clarify, you're not asking for action for us on this matter today?
That's correct. There's okay. No action.
Okay.
We can't today. It's not itemized. Noticed correctly.
Thank you. So I wanted to comment, first of all, I hope we will also return with more detail on the issue that's gotten less attention of the state bills that's passed, which is the unfunded mandate problem, which I'm not necessarily asking for more today, but maybe the next time we come back, if we could look at options in terms of what are the range of things it covers and what are different things we could be looking to do, both in terms of our state advocacy, and I'm pleased to hear the advocacy is happening, and anything we need to do to continue that around the funding for those efforts, and any other suggestions, because separate from the issue of the regulatory authority, there is that question of the additional tasks and how we're going to do them. And I also would like, when we come back on that and 1118, to talk about whether 1118 can be subdivided to separate out some of the smaller emitters, for example, because we talked about whether the workload would be excessive on our team to get things done. But then I did want to comment on the main issue that folks are concerned about, which is this question of the increasing emissions, the increased burning of dirtier burning materials, and the ongoing health impacts to our communities. Because even if it were the case that state law is dealing with the global impacts of emissions, we still have a responsibility to our communities, to those who live on the fence line and are having disproportionate health impacts on the folks in our communities. And so even if one believed that the global impacts of greenhouse gases have been handled, the local impacts, including from PM and other toxins, those issues we know are not resolved by what happened at the state level. So I really want to make sure we don't neglect that, and that going forward that we do come back on the PM issue as well as the other health-impacting pollutants. I also do want us to continue to explore, and I am not expecting us to answer this today, this question of reduce versus cap, because I now reread the document, and it sure looks like it says that what's prohibited is reduction. And so it seems to me that that is an area that warrants more exploration. And then lastly, I'll just say that I want us as an agency, of course, not to forget that we still have all kinds of authority that we can use to make change. We haven't in any way lost our authority to educate, to incentivize, to fund people to get them to do things, to promote things, you know, whether it's carpooling or switching out your old generator for a better generator, that we can still do a lot by way of public outreach and education and incentivization, as well as there's lots of things in terms of direct regulation that are clearly not preempted, and others that may need more research to determine whether or not they're preempted. And also that we would look at this issue of the concentration of mobile sources. I know we're talking about this in terms of stationary sources, but as staff correctly pointed out, and thank you, we've been working together on this Oakland hotspot problem, that where you have a lot of trucks and a lot of ships and a lot of trains coming together, it may not be called a stationary source, but you may have a location with a huge concentration of emissions in one spot because of a collection of mobile sources. And so we're still going to need to continue to strengthen our strategies on those type of things as well. And thank you very much. And thank you to all the advocates who have continued to keep this moving. Thanks.
And Madam Chair, I just wanted to thank Director Kaplan for her leadership on that effort, because she has started us down a path. I hope that will lead to some real reductions in the West Oakland community.
Yes. Yes, I would second that. Thank you. So in order, I have Rod, followed by Brad, followed by Dave, followed by John. Have I missed anyone? Okay. Jim? Okay. Rod.
Thank you very much. So I also noticed this article saying that one of our five refineries had proposed to substantially increase its import of oil by ship. What does staff suggest we might do about this? My understanding is we are a net exporter of refined oil products. And so we would increase, I mean, if we're concerned about human health impacts in the Bay Area, surely, you know, we ought to be considering what we can do in response to this move.
So, Madam Chair, I can have Jamie Williams, our Director of Engineering, give you a status of that project. This is the P66 project. Jamie?
Yeah, so we're currently undergoing a CEQA evaluation to understand the environmental impacts. I think some of the key information we're trying to consider is they're not looking at an overall increase in the amount of crude that they would refine. But just,
they are not?
No, but changing the way in which it would arrive. So the ability to bring in more by ship and less by pipeline.
Would this increase the carbon intensity of the feedstock?
That is part of what we're trying to evaluate. Obviously, we don't directly regulate that feedstock, so yeah. There is the potential for that. But either way,
I see. Okay, and Director
Zinks, I would point out we do have Regulation 1215. 1215 requires a number of reporting by the refineries in terms of their crude slates. We adopted that regulation, if you recall, largely because we wanted to monitor their crude slate input. And so while the oil companies have raised some questions about whether this new bill impacts that, we're moving forward with 1215 and its reporting. So that is something that's also a part of the...
Yeah, and I would also point out, just to add to that, is that they would have to make some substantial changes to their actual refining capabilities and through submitting a permit application to refine a much heavier or dirtier crude. So they would have to make other changes aside from this, which would require a permit application and a separate evaluation.
And there's nothing in the bill and staff's interpretation which would limit what we've done with 1215.
We believe it doesn't affect it, but I mean, bills were signed in the law just last week, so we're still...
So just to be brief then, I'm concerned about 1118. When we began this process, it was going to come to us in May of this year, and then it was like July, August. Now we're out to November. And to me, the promise of really having a big impact on human health and communities adjacent to large stationary sources, this seemed really like a very attractive thing. Can you comment on why it's moved out and what we can do to make sure that it doesn't keep moving out?
Director Sinks, I'll start and I'll have my staff add to my remarks. But largely, we were out with a proposed rule and a CEQA document. We were going to bring it to you in May, like you mentioned. But we did receive a lot of comments. And that's part of the rulemaking process, right? So we want to be able to ensure that that rule withstands any kind of legal challenge. And so we want to be able to address those comments. We're not changing the rule at all. We're just recirculating a CEQA document, a neg deck at this time, and ensuring ourselves that everything is being addressed and the public has an opportunity through that process to comment to us as well. So
there's no way to bring it in at this point. We're sort of locked into November.
Well, I would prefer us to make sure that we're thorough in our
review. No, I understand. So. But given that you want to be thorough, we can't apply more resources and make it go faster.
No, but actually, Director Kaplan made a point about this, and that's do we shorten down the number of sources that are subject to the rule? That's something we're looking at. That comment came up to us during the rulemaking process. It's something we're looking at, but right now, I think November is as soon as we can get in there.
Yeah, that hits all the marks we need to. I think Jack misspoke. It is an EIR, and so to build in that final part of the process, we need that time to make sure we get it done correctly.
I apologize. It's a full CEQA document. It's EIR.
Thank you.
Brad from the north.
I'm happy to hear it's a full CEQA document because I was nervous about the neg deck. But next steps, I'm looking forward to the agenda where we can talk about the 617 and calendaring that and what that's going to look like for our future. Do we have an idea when that's coming up?
Sorry, Director Wagon, can you ask the question again?
For 617, it's going to take a calendar recalendering and re-looking at some of the issues. When are we looking at that at coming to us?
Well, can I just indicate that there's a lot to be sorted out here between ourselves and what was intended by that law and how the different districts are interpreting it. That's something, given that it was signed into law just last week, we've had numerous calls already. We're going to continue to meet up in Sacramento to try to sort it out. And so I frankly was going to come back through probably the executive committee with the work plan that I highlighted in the fall. The problem is I need to understand is exactly what is the thinking behind it before I can tell you exactly.
No, I don't want you to come before you're ready. I'm just trying to get a sense of when we're thinking that's going to be. And so you're thinking sometime September-ish.
Right. But the law does say that it has some very specific future effective compliance dates in it. I think the schedule is due when, Brian?
October.
The schedule itself, I think, is due at the end of 2018, but then it rolls out with rulemaking that's supposed to be implemented by 2023. So,
okay.
One of the key things here is we can think about our own rulemaking, our own monitoring, our own community emission reduction programs, but the State Air Resources Board is going to be working with all the air districts on those issues too, and so hopefully they will have expeditiousness in mind as well.
Hopefully. Thank you.
Thanks. And next I have Dave, John, and Jim. Anybody else while I'm writing this down?
Yeah, I've been reading this bill probably too much during this meeting. and it really comes down to page 2 of section 3. And probably a couple sentences. And it reminds me that it seems like it was only a month ago that we brought before this board, many people requested it, a request to cap 3 greenhouse gases. I mean, we couldn't cap 3 greenhouse gases. Now the state is pretty much taken away. I mean, a lot of people out here don't think they've taken away the cap, but they have taken away the cap. For carbon dioxide, 90% of the emissions come from these stationary sources. We see that we have a strength in 13 to do something about the methane. So, I mean, are we really going to debate for several more meetings, NOx? I mean, it's time to get past the greenhouse gas caps and get to the real health pollution issues that many of us said we wanted to do long ago. I will not spend any more time, and I hope staff doesn't either, about caps on greenhouse gases, 3 greenhouse gases that we're only going to lose in the end. I've been through these lawsuits. They side with the legislature. We need to move on. We didn't get it. We tried.
Well, I think that was clear, Dave. John and then Jim, and I think that's it.
Thanks, Liz. So just a couple of questions and comments on all of this. Let me just start on the back end with AB 617 and then get to the AB 398. Under 617, I mean, the legislature anticipated identifying hotspots, not just for stationary sources, but just hotspots that may have a combination of stationary and mobile sources, which be like the Port of Oakland, where there's rail and trucks and things like that. So I want to first start by saying I think while there's a concern about funding this, and that's always a concern, that the goal of 617 is clearly a good one, which is to identify the hotspots around the state and get CARB working with local air districts to reduce, to improve health. And I think we need to recognize that we've been doing more than any other district in the state, so we have to remember those other parts of the state that aren't getting the same aggressive local air district action needed a bill like this, needed 617, because, for example, in the South Coast, there needs to be more effort. So I just want to acknowledge that point. And yes, while we have authority to raise fees on stationary sources within certain limits, we don't have authority to raise fees on mobile sources. So we need to look at cap and trade funding, funding from the state to help us do that. But it's, you know, the Port of Oakland, clearly that's a big issue, and this will help push things. We've done a lot with 1215, so I think we want to support getting funding from the state, but recognize that this statewide, it's a good thing to force districts to do more of this, especially those who have not gone as far as us. On 398, there were two elements of that bill that dramatically impacted regulations. The limitation, however it's characterized, on local air districts, but also there was a limitation on the California Air Resources Board as well from adopting regulations for certain facilities under cap and trade. So, I mean, it's significant in both those ways. And the language was a little different, right, as it applied to the Air Resources Board versus how it applied to local air districts. So I assume, Jack, you would indicate you're taking some time to explore that legal issue. I understand there's a lot of issues. What was the intent? What's the language on its face? How is it going to be applied? What are the risks? How does this apply toward how we draft a rule 1216 if we go forward with 1216? So can you talk about and then I have another question about criteria and PM after that. But can you talk a little bit about how you would see trying to look further into this legal issue and coming back to us and having further discussion?
So as we understand 398, it really only limits us in terms of that narrow slice of seeking CO2 reductions from these sources. And so it really is, I think you all have said it, it's this reduce versus cap issue. Mm-hmm. While you've heard from a number of representatives of the community that want us to move quickly to try to figure this out, that does not make sense to me personally. I don't believe that makes sense for this organization. I think we do need to take our time. We need to work with the state because having been through numerous meetings and testifying, there was clearly an intent behind this bill to take a certain set of steps. And I do believe that senators and assembly and women all voted for this bill to not only extend cap and trade, but to take steps to remove what they believe was duplicative regulation. I heard that terminology quite a bit in the conversations and discussions. That being said, I think it behooves us to try to understand the intent and talk with legal staff up at the state. And I've asked Brian and I to have those conversations before we're prepared to really come back to you with any kind of specific time frame or any kind of specific proposal relative to 1216. Instead, I would prefer us to spend our time seeking to be able to secure some resources so we can get those in place to implement 617. Because while it may sound like the fall or the end of 2018 sounds like a long ways away, that isn't in our world. We need funding sooner rather than later. And it takes, at a minimum, about 18 months just to put in place a monitoring network in a community, as from what I'm told, and that's an expedited process. So I would like to have us focus on securing the kind of resources we need to implement 617 while we then take our time, frankly, figuring out this issue. on.
I mean, I do think we owe it to ourselves and to the public to have this full analysis that to fully understand how the language plays out. I mean, there's been these different interpretations of it, so I think we owe it to have a thoroughness of that. I understand you're posing a different interpretation, but you want to understand that more and work with the state to understand that interpretation. And when would you be coming back to us on that?
It depends on what we find out. Let me say it that way. And so we're about to walk into a time in which it's difficult to secure people, but I already have a number of commitments by folks up there to sit down with us and try to figure this out. And I think you just need to give us a few months while we do that. And we'll come back to you whether it makes sense to propose.
But can't be done any faster than that? I mean, from that discussion, to report back?
Oh, we can have a report back. It's just that then what does that mean? What is the if we are going to move forward with any kind of regulation, that would be something that would take some time.
I'm saying reporting back on this whole legal issue. That's more quicker rather than sooner rather than later.
Right. I'm going to look to Brian to add to my remarks.
I'm not sure how long it'll take. I think that in the end, and everybody is going to be dissatisfied with whatever answer you see. These are legal interpretation issues, and litigation is driven by lawyers who have opinions on both sides of questions. I can tell you my view is that the legislature, as Jack said, had an intent in mind. I think it's pretty clear from everything we've seen what that was. People obviously differ. There is that one statement in a floor document that suggests that we have authority that I believe the legislature does not believe it left us with. That's my view of the history. We can spend more time analyzing that for you if you'd like. I don't know what the appropriate time frame is, how long it'll take us to reach out to folks. But these, in the end, are legal opinions, and they are what they are. And I think we will have to decide whether we want to move forward in an era of uncertainty here. I think Mr. Broadbent has laid out a path forward for us that gets at the real issues and doesn't devolve into debates over those questions. And I think what our view is, we'd rather spend our time on things that make a difference for people's real health impacts. That's where we are.
Yeah, I'll get to the health issue next. I think we owe having this full sort of analysis and discussion just because how far along we are, and I realize your interpretation, and there's different interpretations, but ultimately to have this, you were going to some further analysis and report back to us as soon as possible.
Yeah, Madam Chair, I'd like to leave it at that as soon as possible, because I don't know what, frankly, I mean, I've already had enough conversations that there are differing interpretations from different people. And so I need to sort all that out and then come back with a solid recommendation to this board. I'd rather be in that position, Director Gioia, than because we are going to be operating in a lot of uncertainty here. We have been operating under a lot of uncertainty for some time.
Right.
And this just made it that much more uncertain.
So let me turn just briefly, finally, to criteria pollutants, PMs from stationary sources. The direction on May 31st was that you would come back in September, I think it was September, with a specific plan about how we were going to address the criteria pollutant issue, including PMs. Not the toxic PM, the PM, right, obviously, that's under criteria pollutant. I want to be really clear, because that's the health impact that a number of members here, as well as members of the public, have expressed the highest concern about. So I want to hear the timeline on that, and that we're still on that timeline to report back in September on PM criteria pollutants.
Right. So at the September board meeting, I was going to give you a plan on the specific actions we're going to be taking. And that's still our plan right now. We're still working on that.
Which meeting in September, you think, Jack?
It's the second board meeting.
Second meeting.
We typically don't meet the first time, meeting in September, largely because of quorum issues, but... I just don't know the date off the top of my head. I can get the date for you. But.
Because when we took the criteria pollutant part out of 1216, that's when we said the alternative was to come back with this plan about how to address criteria pollutants. So we're still on schedule.
Yes.
You'll present that in September.
September 20th.
And then we would have at that point a clear idea of the time of the rule development and what it would be, the rule would get implemented.
Right. That plan would lay out a set of schedule for you, a rulemaking schedule.
Because, again, we're hearing that's the highest priority for a lot of priority for a number of folks, not everyone, about how we implement those health.
Right.
And then
right.
the timing, again, on the toxics rule, believe that that has been, because of the number of facilities affected, that's going to take longer.
Well, yes, and also, like I indicated earlier, when we went through the process originally, staff is indicating to me that they receive comments that make them think that they need to recirculate an EIR. I'm going to make sure I understand explicitly what the comments are. Because I just assume, frankly, expedite that as well, frankly.
So we'll get a report in September on that as well.
Yes, you will.
Okay. For now, thanks.
Thank you. And the second meeting is September 20th. Jim Sparing?
John asked the questions. I was asking about the timeline on 1216. No questions. Thank you.
I think that's it, unless I have missed somebody along the way. Thank you all. Thank you, audience, for your comments. And I think we're winnowing down the number of board of directors that we have here. So that would take us at this point to any public comment. And I think we have a couple of cards.
I just have Greg Karras.
Okay. Different topic, Greg, than the previous?
Turn it on, Greg.
It's still about air quality. Greg Karras, CBE. I'm quoting something that Brian Bunger just said. I think we would rather spend our time on things that make a difference to people's health. He was responding to the question of how we ultimately move forward or not on this refinery emission caps that has been a GHG and particulate caps issue for 5 years now. So I want to talk about what does he mean make a difference? What actually has this agency done? The Chevron refinery in Richmond, at the Valero refinery in Benicia, at the Phillips 66 San Francisco refinery in San Luis Obispo, the front end of what pollutes us here in Rodeo, and at its back end in Rodeo. Communities stood up to tar sands and dirty oil expansion and refining projects for export, and communities and cities and local governments stopped or slowed those projects. That happened while the staff was telling you to take longer before you cap emissions. Every one of those cases, your agency processed those permits that turned out to be rejected and in many cases found to be illegal. The most recent one in Rodeo, we asked you in December when we got the preliminary court hearing to make sure your staff rescinded the illegal permit that was based on an EIR that had been invalidated. Staff has not done so. Now they say there's no overall increase in the oil. And when you ask about the carbon intensity, they say, well, we don't know yet. What they actually said in the notice is there won't be any change. But think about this, more than four times increase in ship traffic delivery over the wharf, 130,000 barrels per day. That's so much that unless they're going to close the front end of the refinery, which nobody should believe for a second, there obviously will be an expansion. They can't refine all of that capacity without closing down the front end of the refinery unless they have an increase. Will there be an oil quality change? Of course. They can't get the same kind of oil by ship that they can get from pipeline from the Central Valley. Of course there will be. And in fact, what they tell their investors is it's going to be Canadian heavy. It's going to be tar sands. And it's going to be a full-blown tar sands refinery. And your staff's going to process that permit just like every one of the other ones I mentioned and many more I didn't. And that is what you are allowing to happen if you drop 5 years of work when the plain language of the law, let's look, we're not in Alice in Wonderland. Up is not down. You know that. We know that. We see you, and we are not going away.
That is the end of public communication on non-agenda matters and takes us to
Madam
any
Chair,
regular.
I'm sorry, I meant to make one other comment. Can I do it briefly? It's just about...
Yes, it's board member comments time.
Okay. All right. I'll wait. I'll take it.
No, it is. I mean, okay. Go ahead.
Oh, yeah. Okay, good. We also are reporting...
You're right in the right spot.
Before I make the... Okay. So just to note, I know, Jack, you were intending to bring to Stationary Source an update on the Phillips 66 application, so I just wanted to confirm that so everybody was aware of that, because it got discussed and raised by a few folks. Just to confirm, the Phillips 66 Marine Terminal application, I know you were planning to update at a Stationary Source committee meeting.
Right. This is a project in which the district serves as the lead, agency under CEQA. So... So we have to keep that in mind. But I think as you and I have discussed in terms of future agendas for the Stationary Source Committee, this is something you had asked for, and we're going to schedule it at the appropriate time.
Okay. And then you want us to report out on our AC at the okay.
Yep.
So I will.
Why don't you let me just set the stage for it, and then I'll ask all of you who participated. So this year the conference was held in Pittsburgh, which was surprising, and John will speak, Brad, Mark, Brad wasn't there, Mark was there, and Dave. Anybody else who was there?
I was.
Oh, Dave. David. David was there. And Rod.
Yep.
And the conference was very valuable for me. It'll be interesting to hear from the others. But more than that, what I found was fascinating was Pittsburgh itself, which was written up in the New York Times on Sunday and certainly received favorable reviews, and I would absolutely underscore that. I had no high expectations for Pittsburgh, and I really enjoyed it. So especially a ride up in the funicular to the top where you could see the fabulous views of the three rivers coming together. That sounds somewhat lighthearted, but we do a very serious business here, and it's occasionally nice to have a chance for us to be together more casually, get a lot of information, which I certainly did, and it was a thoroughly enjoyable trip. I might also mention that in the New York Times on Sunday is an article on a bypassed era where they maintained that volcanoes had a great deal to do with CO2. I don't have the article with me. I can tell you it definitely is in the New York Times last Sunday. Did anyone else read it? Thank you. I would have guessed you might, Mark. I don't remember the name of it, but I know that the gist of it is that the Earth was virtually destroyed, 90% destroyed, during that period of time when volcanoes were so active that they essentially released enough greenhouse gas, CO2, that it eventually killed just about all of life on Earth. Rather sobering. So I will try and get a website for that article for you, because I thought it was worth reading. So now, John, you had started in on that.
Sure.
And then in any order you want to comment.
Okay. So just I did attend. I thought there were some very interesting presentations. I've got 20 pages of typewritten notes that I'm willing to send to anyone on at least highlighting some of the sessions that I attended. But I think specifically it was interesting getting updates on panels on sort of the future of GHG regulation, environmental regulations, EPA priorities under the Trump administration. And what I thought was interesting, while the EPA folks had been invited, they did not show up. There were no, at least on that panel. So it was interesting to hear the analysis by folks who were not with the EPA, because I suppose they were, you know, not given authority to show up and to talk about this. There were interesting panels on, I thought, very timely, addressing sustainability, climate change, and air quality in a conservative political environment. With how do you develop climate change strategies in conservative communities? So really interesting discussions on projects, and again, sort of the summary of some of that was, you know, how do you talk about this issue, and how do you show the broader appeal of these? So there was and I have that for anyone who's interested. There were interesting topics about business sustainability reporting and disclosure in this era. How do businesses, including oil companies, disclose risks associated with climate change and sustainability, and how that is relayed to investors. I thought panels on public health benefits of greenhouse gas reduction programs, and there was interesting things happening in the Northeast that I was unaware of that were useful. How to address best available control technologies, including, I thought, was new in the GHG field. I thought that the whole tenor of this conference, it's interesting that, you know, there's a lot of professionals who were there, and then there were not as many public folks there. And it is interesting hearing the perspective of those outside California. And it's clear we are so different in this state. It is clear that we are approaching things very different, but it helps us here to hear what others are saying that may not always be aligned with our thinking, and it helps us sort through how we want to achieve our objectives. So again, I thought it was valuable. Disappointed in that, again, that we didn't get folks from the administration and EPA be honest and talk on the record, but it was useful nonetheless. And anyone's interested, I have my notes.
Rob, why don't you jump in?
Thank you. So I thought the panel discussions talking about where the administration intends to head, but the limits that the bureaucracy, the process, and the courts limit an administration to were fascinating. And for me, it was ironic that, you know, Trump had just announced that we were withdrawing from Paris, referencing the fact that he represents Pittsburgh. And then the mayor, Peduto, says, no, actually, we... And I think he put out a letter with the mayor of Paris saying, we will adhere to the Paris agreement. Mm-hmm. It was also heartening for me to, while it was disheartening to see low attendance and a lot of professionals in the field feeling like their career paths were now being stunted, folks who had spent their entire professional careers, right, devoted to cleaner air and a better climate. What was heartening to me is to go out to the city, as Liz mentioned, at night and see what previously had been shrouded in dirty air. We had a clear view for miles. Pittsburgh is a coal capital in the United States, and the incumbent electricity provider in Pittsburgh gets 47% of its electricity from coal to this day. But now Green Mountain Energy, a private company, is now selling at comparable price 100% renewable, and Pittsburgh residents are picking it up. So, going to that part of the country and seeing how Pittsburgh has, I mean, they have a ways to go, and they're not where we are. They have a different bar, but you know, they're committed to cleaner air and a clean climate as well. And so that was refreshing.
Thanks, Brad. Either one on this side.
David's next.
Yeah, I'm trying not to get the same thing everybody else does, but it is amazing. I can still remember this article in the 60s. Pittsburgh had the worst air in the country, by far, more than L.A., New York, you name it. It's not that way now. They made a commitment, and they followed up with it. I spent more time at the technical coordinating meetings probably this year than I have in the last three. And it's kind of easy to see direction things are going and where the next meeting will be. The two things that I want to highlight that were the most impressive to me, one was not in the meetings. It was Volvo and the autonomous vehicles that were running around town. It was amazing how many of those things were. I mean, Pittsburgh's becoming a very connected city. And as difficult as that can be with a city that has that many bridges, you can understand. It's they're solving a problem. The other was I was at a meeting for refineries, and a lot of very interesting questions come up. I will focus on one. The gentleman, I believe he was a teacher in town, not with the refinery, said, even if we were able to move the methane emissions to zero, we could not meet the standards of the Paris Agreement. We still had further to go.
Thank you, Madam Chair. It was, as always, a very enlightening meeting, especially in Pittsburgh with the dichotomy of it being an industrial town, but it offers the perspective of they are having a much greater challenge converting to a greener economy and a greener sustainability path than you might imagine. And they're filling in their hollow shell of industriousness with sustainability. And we're kind of blessed out here. We didn't have to have that kind of a conversion. But the sessions at the conference were enlightening, because other areas have a different perspective, much like Pittsburgh does. But they do see the path forward as being greener. And despite the pontifications from Washington, there are other areas and other pathways that are being developed. We think we're in the forefront. But when I go to these conferences, especially this one, people are catching up to us. They have bigger challenges than we do, and a lot less political momentum than we do. But they have as much motivation for those who are engaged in that than I've ever seen. And there are other areas doing just as much, in some cases more than we are. And we should be mindful of that. And I will submit a list of the sessions I attended. Thank you.
I think that's it, isn't it, for those?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just want to recognize the staff. First of all, we received a wonderful presentation. He was a featured speaker, Henry Hilken. But as I talked to the different attendees, they all came from different backgrounds, whether it's from industry or wherever their background is from. But it seems like the Bay Area Air Quality Management District, and this is the first time I've attended one of these, continues to be a leader. So that's a credit to Jack and his leadership. I will tell you this, that I think in terms of your staff, Jack, I especially want to recognize Rex, Vanessa, and Maricela. They do a tremendous, tremendous job. And sometimes, as elected officials, we may overlook staff, but they should be commended for the wonderful work that they do. And I'll just close by saying this. It was really an eye-opener to see how far some parts of the country are behind. One of the speakers, and I know Rod and I laughed at this, they were talking about clean coal. And so I guess anything's possible. So that sort of struck me. I came back. Pittsburgh's a wonderful city. But as I came back, the airplane, looking at the Bay Area, it just gave me solace to know that I'm part of an organization that's forward-thinking and is changing the landscape, not only in California, but in the United States. And I think it's important. I think Mr. Gioia, who's not here, always references the point that no matter what the federal government does, there's a lot we can do at a local level. So kudos to you, Jack, and your staff.
And thank you all so much. Jack, do you know when the next meeting is of the conference, next June, or where?
It's typically the third week in June, and they're scheduling it to be in Hartford, Connecticut.
I thought they moved it to the first week now, or is that just...
No, that was just for this last year because of the convention availability, things like that. So,
well, I was surprised by Pittsburgh. Maybe I could be surprised by Hartford.
It's near New York.
Yes.
Sort of.
So yeah. With that, is there any other business, report of the executive officer, so forth?
Madam Chair, I'm just going to do something very quick and introduce three new promotions and hires that I introduced them to the executive committee on Monday. One is Rainey Chang, who is the lead of our technology information office. She's our technology information officer. She may not be in the room. Second, Karen Skolnick was made permanent head of our strategic incentives division. She also is not in the room, so I just keep all this in mind. But it's my pleasure to introduce Judy Catino, our acting health officer, and all three are great additions to the management team here at the district, and I just wanted to have them be recognized. That's my report.
Thanks so much. A very warm welcome to them. And I think with that, the chairperson's report pretty much was concentrating on Pittsburgh. Also want to let you know that the next regularly scheduled meeting of this board will not be until September 20th. We've canceled the 16th of August and the September 6th meeting. And we'll see you again on September 20th. In the meantime, we will be working assiduously on obtaining funding in Sacramento. So, have I forgotten anything?
Do we have any more committee meetings prior to that board meeting?
We do.
I don't have them all listed here, but I know. I think all of August is canceled, but I don't know about.
So there may be committee meetings in September.
Yes, there is. That's listed in your board package.
Thank you.
Yeah, Maricela always makes sure that you know when those meetings are. So.
And then she'll let you know when they're canceled.
Yes, that she'll let you know when they're canceled. If there's nothing else to add, this board is adjourned. And thank you all, the ones of you who stayed. I really appreciate it. I know it's hard on a Tuesday, and many of you have other meetings you need to go to. So we stand adjourned. Thank you, David. You did. You're right.